ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Do you feel stuck at work? Maybe you're not advancing the way you should, or you want to change your career, but you don't know how. The answer could be reinvention. Hello, I'm Lisa Leong with ABC Radio National's This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. Reinventing yourself might sound a little extreme and maybe even unnecessary, but our expert guest will walk you through why she believes everyone will need to go through it at least once in their careers. Dori Clark is a top business leader. She is an executive education professor. She's a best-selling author and musical theatre writer and investor. Her book, Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future, has recently been adapted into an online course. Dori, g'day, mate.
Lisa, thank you so much. Good to be here with you.
So why do you say it's almost certain that at some stage in our lives we will need to reinvent ourselves, Dori?
I think the major reason we need to reinvent ourselves is that life doesn't really seem to work out according to our plans. I think most people have discovered that, unfortunately. And it would be a lot easier if we could just map out a strategy, follow that strategy, and have everything fall into place. And the truth is, sometimes it works, but the vast majority of the time, there are factors that you can't predict. There's pandemics, there's new competitors, there's people changing their minds about things. And it means that we have to pivot.
Reinvention, I mean, it's a big word. Does it need to be that big?
I actually literally try to make it small because I like to differentiate between capital R reinvention, which I think is what springs to mind for most people. You know, I was a lawyer and now I'm going to be a florist. And what I call lowercase r reinvention, which is these small, subtle changes that all of us can make and that actually keep us a little bit more nimble. It's kind of like working the reinvention muscle so that if there are changes that we ultimately want to make, it feels a little less traumatic to do it because you have been evolving along the way.
So one of the first steps in your reinvention process is to find out what you think about yourself. Why is that important, Dori?
When you get clear on yourself, it's a really important starting point because, of course, it's not totally sufficient. You need to look at the market. You know, what will people pay you to do? You can't just indulge your whims. But you also want to make sure it's your career. It's your life. You're doing this 40 or even more hours per week. So you want it to be something that makes you feel interested, fulfilled. And it's a useful starting point to kind of create this Venn diagram, you know, these overlapping circles of, okay, what am I interested in? What am I good at? What would I not mind or maybe even love spending 40 hours a week doing? And then you can overlay that with the next question of, okay, do other people want that? And how can I tweak it just a little bit to make sure that other people also think it's a good idea to pay me to do it?
I know people might even have a negative self-perception of, you know, especially if they're stuck, right? How do you counteract that negative starting point?
It's so true that people, when they are in the process of reinvention, can sometimes feel bad about themselves. If they have been forced into reinvention, it might not be a thing that they chose, and there can be a period of mourning or grieving. I know that was the case for me when I got laid off from my very first job as a journalist. I thought that was going to be my career, and it turns out I couldn't even manage to find a second job as a journalist. I had to pivot and change careers for myself. So I think there is a kind of grief associated with it. Sometimes people feel like it's a personal referendum on them or their performance, and so it's hard, but it's important, of course, to find ways to focus on the future and focus on the next step. I think what I would most advise people is to recognize that you absolutely have transferable skills. And sometimes we get locked into this view, you know, I'm a lawyer, I can only ever be a lawyer. But it turns out if you're a lawyer, you often, depending on the type of law you practice, have really good public speaking skills. You're very persuasive. Those are things that you can apply in a lot of areas, whether it's sales or communication. You're probably pretty detail-oriented. These are all things that can be the basis for other fulfilling paths.
All right. So we've sort of counteracted that negative self-perception. And now it's time, and this could be a little bit scary, but to do a little bit of research on ourselves in the perception in the outside world. So what sort of information should we be gathering here?
So we can actually learn a lot about ourselves from talking to other people, and it can feel confronting because you're always a little bit worried, what are they going to say about me? Oh, do I want to know it? But the truth is, realistically, you are going to ask people that you care about, that you like. They're not going to tell you some horrible thing about yourself. But what they may well do is highlight for you areas of yourself that you don't really notice very often. And I'll give you an example. There was an exercise that I did with a group of clients once, and they all knew each other pretty well. And they decided, oh, you know, we want to do this for one guy in the group. So they sent him out of the room, and they all went around, and I had them write down three words to describe this colleague. And for 7 out of 10 people, one of the top three words they used to describe him was creative. And I am willing to bet, first of all, that if somebody said, are you creative, yes or no, he would have said, sure, yes, I'm creative. I am equally sure that he did not understand that for 70% of his colleagues, it was the defining trait. And so you can really learn a lot about what is it that stands out and is very memorable about you in the minds of other people.
I love that. So that's one of the great questions we can ask people, which is, what three words would you use to describe me? What are some other useful questions, Dory, that you love, that you've seen really impactful to ask other people?
So one question that I really like, I tell a story in Reinventing You about a woman named Mary that had a kind of focus group about herself. She had about half a dozen friends and coworkers get together. And she had one friend who was a facilitator asking questions, and Mary was not allowed to say anything. She just sat there and took notes. But while she was there, her friends were weighing in. And the question that they asked was, if you didn't know what job Mary had, what would you guess? And that was so interesting. Another one which is useful is, what are the gifts that you wish that Mary would share more with the world? And she got all kinds of suggestions. People were saying everything from children's book author to political consultant. And it was things that she had never thought of, but it expanded her sense of what was possible for her.
They're beautiful questions, Dory, and I can see how useful they would be. Dory, what if we don't even know what we want to do next?
There's a lot of people who are not really sure about the direction that they want, and that's okay. I think that we often hold ourselves up to these very high standards. There's a lot of discourse these days about, you know, follow your passion. What you really need to do is be animated by your purpose. And that's really great if you have a passion and a purpose. But for a lot of people, they hear that and they say, I don't know. And then they feel bad about themselves, like there's something wrong. And I really want to push back against that, because the truth is, we most often discover our passion or our purpose through doing things. It's not that we are waiting to discover it and then we act. We find it through the action. And so instead, in my most recent book, The Long Game, I propose a different framework. I call it Optimize for Interesting. And my goal is to encourage people, if you are making a choice and you're just not really sure which option to pick, pick the more interesting one. Because that way you don't have to ask yourself this deep existential question of, oh, is this job my destiny? Am I meant for this? You just say, does this seem interesting to me? And as long as it does, keep going. And if it stops, do something else. this is the easiest criteria in the world, but it helps get you closer to where you need to be.
And really, it's not about waiting for things to drop in our laps, is it? If we were hoping to do a bit of maybe even desktop research, where would we start there, Dory?
one great thing, of course, is just searching through your social networks and seeing who do I know, or if not me personally, who do my close friends know? And I can ask them, you know, hey, would you mind introducing me? This is not something you can do with everyone, but for close friends, they're willing to extend their political capital and see if those people are willing to have conversations with you. But ultimately, it's about finding data points. And one thing that I would encourage is, as a data point, you don't want to be looking at reasons why something is right. That's very easy to convince yourself, oh, this would be so perfect for me. This is a great job. Everything looks like a great job if you look at certain criteria. If you look at being an investment banker, well, yeah, that's a great job. They pay you so well, and there are amazing perks. And look, you wear fancy clothes and go to a fancy office and you get free steak dinners, you know, whatever it is. But then what you want to be asking people, what you want to be digging into is, what are the bad parts of this job? For people who would not be a good fit for this job, what do they have in common? You know, what do you hate about this job? And then you say, oh, well, gosh, if I don't want to work 100 hours a week, maybe this isn't the job for me.
So I love the fact that you don't ever describe it as a giant leap. It's more that we're doing things to ensure, you know, that the next step we optimize for interesting. So what are the things we can do to make sure it isn't a giant leap? How can we get little tasters along the way?
There's one example in Reinventing You where I talk about, I interviewed a career coach and she was telling me about a woman that came in and she wanted to reinvent herself into being a florist. So, okay, great. This woman loved flowers. She was certain she wanted to be a florist. Fantastic. So the career coach says to her, great, have you ever worked at a florist? And the woman says, no, but I don't need to. I know that I love it. And the coach said, you know what? I'm going to ask you to do me a favor. Spend a day working at the florist just to see if you like it. Sure enough, she goes in, she works at the florist, she leaves at lunch and never comes back. And the reason is that she did not understand that when you work at a florist, you're essentially working in a refrigerator. And she hated the cold, and she suddenly decided after 3 hours, oh, I guess this isn't the career for me. So find the small test.
I love that. So are we talking, is that like volunteering and just maybe even shadowing someone?
I mean, certainly you can volunteer at a lot of tasks, but even job shadowing, if you have a friend, you know, clearly it's easier if somebody runs a small business as compared to, you know, hey, you're a vice president at IBM. Can I just follow you around? But depending on the role, you can often find ways to do it. But short of that, you can just take somebody out for lunch and ask them a lot of questions. I profiled someone in the book who was a disgruntled lawyer, and she knew she wanted something different, but she didn't know what. And so the way she kept herself sane was, for about a year and a half, every week, she would take out to lunch somebody that she knew of or that she met who had a different career. And she would ask them all kinds of questions about their job until she hit on one that actually sounded really interesting to her. And that's when she found her lead. And she said, oh my gosh, this sounds exactly like I want to do. But she was essentially wading through options through these lunches.
And it sounds like at this part of the process, it's okay for it to be messy. You don't have to have the answer straight away.
That's right. We all, as humans, want to appear certain. We want to appear like we know what we're doing. And it can feel a little discomforting, because if you have friends or family who are asking you, so, you know, how's that job search going or whatever, it feels so nice to be able to say, oh, I know what I want to do. But I really advise people to avoid premature certainty, because that often leads to bad outcomes. If you just jump on something and say, oh, this is it, clearly, you often lock yourself into a place where it feels difficult or even dangerous to change your mind, because then all of a sudden your reputation, you feel like, is maybe on the line. Oh, I told everyone that I wanted to go into tech, but now I'm not so sure. And then you might essentially feel yourself carried along on a tide that you don't want to be on. So if you're willing to be brave enough to preserve that uncertainty and say, you know what, I'm still figuring it out, I'm looking into this, you can even say, you know, my hypothesis is that I might like this or this, but I'm testing it, that's much better than committing too soon.
You're listening to This Working Life on ABC Radio National. I'm Lisa Leong, and my guest is Dori Clark, personal branding expert and author of Reinventing You. Later, how to handle being a beginner after the reinvention. Once we've decided, this is a direction I want my reinvention to take, you do recommend creating a story around it. Let's go deeper into this. What do you mean by create a story?
What I want to be clear about, this is not about a story to puff yourself up or to hoodwink other people, but the truth is most other people are pretty busy and they are not that focused on you and your detailed career narrative arc. So they just have no idea. They're not clued in. And so you need to give them something to latch onto, because otherwise it is not going to make a lot of intuitive sense to them if you were making a job change or certainly a career change. They will, if left to their own devices, often come up with answers that make sense to them but are not accurate or flattering. Oh, why did she change jobs? Oh, I guess she had a midlife crisis. It's not really a useful narrative. So it's very helpful if you are making a career change to be able to have just a quick explanation. I used to be in investment banking, but what I realized was that I loved math, but I didn't really love other parts of the job. So I have decided to move from investment banking into being a university professor teaching math because I wanted to reconnect with the part of the job that I really loved.
And when we're testing this with our friends and family, often the response is skepticism. Like, come on, really? How would we deal with that, Dori?
You're putting your finger on something important, Lisa, which is that we often assume that our friends and family are going to be our biggest supporters because we're used to them encouraging us. But the truth is, when it comes to reinvention in particular, it can be very confronting for the people in our life. And they often have a stake in it, especially if this is a spouse, for instance. The idea that all of a sudden you've gone from this nice, steady paycheck that everybody in the family can count on to something that might feel a little bit more precarious deeply impacts people's view of their own well-being. So they might not react as positively as you imagine. And it might not be because of you or doubting your abilities. We often take it that way. But sometimes they are reluctant because it's kind of triggering for them. And so rather than assuming your friends and family are going to be supportive, you need to have it in the back of your head. You need to treat them like a stakeholder and be thoughtful about how you lay things out and a strategy to let them know you're serious about it.
What happened to you, Dori, when you started doing the musical theatre writing and investing? Did you have to go through this yourself?
So when I began doing musical theatre writing, one of the things that was most vivid for me was having to go back to being a beginner. And this was not something that I had ever done before. And so I really was new at it. And I was in rooms, I was in a training program. I thought, oh good, a training program, that's what I need. Well, it turns out that this training program, we can put it in air quotes, because I really didn't have training, but there were people who were in my class. Two of them had a master's degree in musical theater, and one was a university professor in music. And so I was the absolute worst. This is not an exaggeration. This is an objective statement because I did not know what I was doing. And so every week after these sessions, I would go back and I just had this mantra, Lisa. And I said, I do not derive my self-worth from this activity. I have self-worth in other areas of my life. But it's very hard and painful for people who are used to being experienced and used to being good at things. You make that a part of your identity. Really hard to go back to being a beginner. It's very humbling, and you have to make your peace with that. It's a useful exercise.
And I would imagine this comes up a lot when you're trying to reinvent yourself, especially if it's something that you haven't seen yourself doing before. You know, even if you wanted to pivot to, say, being a photographer, you've never done it before, but you know in your heart, actually, I know that I can do this. I'm just not at that stage yet. So what would you say we do so that we don't just give up because we think, oh, how can I ever, you know, especially when you were comparing yourself to these people with all of that experience, you know, I'm never going to catch up.
Yeah, it can be very hard. I think that when you're truly a beginner, it's actually just more accurate to be like, yeah, you're not so good yet. And but that's okay. You're a beginner. And so just doubling down on, you know what? You're an intelligent person. You've learned things before. And if you are willing to put in time and effort, which, you know, presumably you are, if you actually care about this reinvention, you will get better. And just being patient with yourself about that, it actually takes an enormous amount of self-confidence to feel okay not being good about something. And, you know, going back to my musical theater story, it's recognizing my self-worth does not hinge on other people thinking that I'm good at this new thing. I don't need to be good yet. I need to do my reps. I need to practice, but I am good enough as a human. I will soon be good as a musical theater writer or as a photographer or whatever the new endeavor is.
What point do we relaunch ourselves and what form should it take?
So reinventing ourselves and relaunching ourselves to the world is a process that can happen at a lot of different places. I think that one thing that can be useful for people is to think about the concept of showing your learning and showing your journey. We often imagine that we have to present ourselves as this fully perfect, finished product of, you know, you didn't see me for the last 6 months, but now here I am, and I am a world-class experienced, you know, insert whatever you are now. And that's a pretty high bar. What is often really interesting for people is to see the journey, to see the work. And let's say you're trying to learn how to start a bakery. Well, it's actually super interesting. People will root for you, even if your baguettes are not the perfect baguettes yet. If you share it and track it on social media or on a blog or whatever it is and say, you know what? I've never baked a loaf of bread in my life, but I am going to learn to bake the perfect baguette. And they watch you over, you know, months and your first year and your second year, and they see, you know, the first one and it's horrifying and misshapen, and eventually it gets better and better. You not only have an audience, you have a team of people that are in your corner saying, yeah, yeah, that's a great baguette.
So we ask our guests each week to leave us with a tip that this working lifers can try for themselves. It's called Try This. So, Dory, what's a tip that people can try this week that sets them on the path to reinvention?
I would like people this week to try the exercise of asking the three-word exercise to half a dozen friends and colleagues. You can do this any way you want. It doesn't have to be uncomfortable. You don't have to have a face-to-face conversation. You can text people. You can send them an email, however you want to do it. But ask them for three words. And do it with at least six people because you want to have a breadth of responses. You don't want one outlier to skew it. But if you have six people telling you three things that stand out the most about you, you are going to learn a lot about what is most distinctive about you. It's actually a top of mind exercise. So it's when you think of me, what are the first three words that come to mind? Maybe it's, you're so strategic. Or maybe you have a really distinctive wardrobe. So it could be, oh, she's so fashionable. These are all telling details. It's going to be different for everyone, but it'll teach you a lot about how you're seen in the world.
Beautiful. All right, let's try this week. And if you give it a go, just give us some feedback on what did you find when you got the words and what did you reflect on as a result of that? Dory, thank you so much.
Lisa, thank you.
That's top business thinker, executive education professor and best-selling author, musical theatre writer and investor, Dory Clark. Her book, Reinventing You, Define Your Brand, Imagine Your Future, has been adapted into an online course. Thanks for listening to ABC Radio National's This Working Life. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Elise Simons on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Naarm, Melbourne. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to our podcast and share it with a colleague or a friend. You can do that on the ABC Listen app or anywhere you listen to your podcasts. I'm Lisa Leong. Until next time, work it like a charm.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.